to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Matty, all I can say is we made it.
A soggy Chief and Matty this morning.
Is there a name for this one, like the one in California?
I don't think so. This is just, in the Midwest, we just call it rain.
Was that one, Bombzilla or something? Or this is some wacky name out on the West Coast.
It didn't look like the 49ers fans in San Francisco last night were very comfortable.
No, no one really left either after a while. That's one nice thing about, well, I don't know if it's a nice thing or not, when you have the cameras on the opposite side of where the cool guys are, I say the cool guys, not the great unwashed, you end up with that side of the stadium, like, empty after halftime. The same thing happens at the Bear game, if you ever notice that.
Yeah, interesting.
So you almost would rather have the cameras on the other side, because the great unwashed has nowhere to go. That's where I usually sit, when I used to go. Anyway, S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 39, Dow futures up 13. So you end up, you know, you don't want the other side where it's cold and everybody's just inside eating. Well, of course, if you own the place, you want everybody inside eating, right? Because that's the ridiculous price stuff you got over there. So, just saying. So your buddy Jack, I know who Jack is, don't you?
You're talking about the founder of Twitter, I assume.
Yeah, Jack. No, Jack says we're going to have hyperinflation soon. Has he been listening to the show?
Very possible. We use his platform.
Yeah.
And so do a lot of our contributors and listeners.
Yeah. He says hyperinflation soon. Interesting, interest sort of thing. By the way, now listen, you were not here on Friday. We talked about the, was it Snap was down so much on Friday? And we dug up another term that we thought was never going to be used again. Remember how we dug up stagflation?
Right.
And now you're hearing that like every other day.
Yeah.
There was another one where stocks were pretty high. I don't know when this was, the 90s. And earnings would come out and a stock would be like 70 and all of a sudden it would open at 20 or something like that. It became known as the trap door. So now all these places come out with that have basically no earnings and no revenue to speak of, considering their stock prices, and they drop by 20%, 30%, 40%. We gonna get that term back? They call it the trap door.
I like it.
Yeah, it was a good one.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it happened to a bunch of stocks, and so I was looking at.
So what's the definition then?
Just means it opens and down you go. There's nothing you can do.
It looks like it's a regular floor, and all of a sudden there's a basement below it.
It's 60, or that stock was 80, and all of a sudden it's 60, and you just, now it's 60. And there was nothing you could do in the meantime. No sell, no memo to get. You know, nothing like the guys on TV, don't worry, we'll sell before it happens kind of thing.
That siren's not chasing after the guy that ran the red light and almost hit you this morning, is it?
No, but we may seem on sometimes like we're very informed on Stocks and Jacks, but there's things that we miss, and obviously we seem to have missed the. It has to be a new state law that when it's pouring rain, you get to go through a red light because it's going to take you longer to get to work. So any advantage you can get, you take.
Of course. Seems fair to me.
Well if you would have bet, I'm not saying you're a betting man, Matt, you know. Well, when I pointed out that card, it was about skidding into the back of that guy. What would have been your chances of success him stopping? I would have given him 50, 60% because he just made it.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't good.
I don't know if you saw him, but he tried to go. There's a guy over here, the Eisenhower. I guess what it's the I to B. What is it? The I to B Wells.
Well, I mean, I guess, but to us, it's Congress heading to the Eisenhower.
Yeah, but now it's I to B Wells. Now, if we were in the sign making business, we would love the change, but we're not. Or let me rephrase: if we were in the connected sign making business, we would be. So we see this guy, and I see him going too fast, and the guy in front of him had the nerve to stop for his red light. Now, what possessed him? Now, he clearly was in the wrong. the guy stopped for the red light. So the guy behind him, you could see him like he was going to stop, but then the part you missed is he tried to go left and actually go around the guy, but there was another car there. So then he had to actually try and stop, and all of a sudden you see him skidding in the rain, and what did he stop, about 4 inches below the guy's bumper? But his first move was to just go around him. Like he still was not about to stop. That's absolutely spectacular. Anyway, for those that aren't in Chicago or out on the West Coast, it's been raining now for pushing 22 hours, and it's been, I won't say it's an absolute summer thunderstorm, but it's been pretty heavy for a long time. What do you make of the stuff going on the West Coast? You don't want to be anywhere near where there was a fire, do you?
Well, no, you don't. But I assume if for the straggling fires that are out there, the rain couldn't hurt.
Gives
the firefighters a fighting chance.
Well, I was reading last night, seeing if there's something. What else is going on in the world? They said by tonight the fire season will be officially over.
There you go.
But I didn't realize that you know, not being around stuff like that, that if you have like a fire in an area, what's left is not dirt. That you can actually, because when they had those storms in Arizona a couple months ago, we were talking about, if you get a bunch of wind ahead of a storm, that stuff can create. It's like ash. It's not. You know, if you see a burned out area, it's not soil. It's, you know, it's light ash, a lot of it. So that stuff runs instantly. Plus, you can actually get a huge wind and sandstorm or dirt storm ahead of a storm. That stuff in the air, and then it gets everything filthy all over the place. Ugh. I think Midwest has its issues, but I don't know about those guys. But now they're talking 8 to 10 feet of snow in the mountains. That's a lot to start the ski season.
I think so. So are we going?
I think it's gonna be a heavy, wet snow. I don't know if I like that stuff so much.
Okay.
So what'd you make of the weekend in sports? And then we'll talk about some business.
Well, the Bears aren't really worth talking about. They dropped their second in a row. We knew that this was going to be the hard part of their schedule, beginning last week with Green Bay and then Tampa, and it doesn't get any easier. But they looked awful again. This was very reminiscent of the Browns game a few weeks back when they went on the road. With Fields at quarterback, and the offensive line all of a sudden couldn't protect, and Fields was inaccurate because he was running for his life, and then, you know, the defense is on the field the whole game, and then it turns into a snowball effect, and that's what happened yesterday in Tampa, and no one expected the Bears to win that game, but you'd like to at least be competitive. They were competitive the week before against Green Bay, and then, that was not good. So, don't want to spend a ton of time talking about that. I really enjoyed watching the Bulls. Man, they're 3-0, first place right now, obviously very early, and they haven't exactly played anyone yet. They played the Pistons twice, and they played New Orleans, who neither of those teams are expected to do much. But, God, all of a sudden, the Bulls are playing an exciting brand of basketball. They're playing defense. They're on offense. They share the ball. They got multiple weapons, the good mix of young guys and old guys. They're fun.
How did the...
I don't know if you've watched them yet, but...
No, but I tried to watch the Blackhawks go, but then
they're unwatchable, and their coach is going to get fired, I would imagine, within the next couple weeks.
Well, what makes them think it's his fault?
Well, I don't think it's his fault necessarily, but they're not even competing in these games, and
they've had a lead in 8 games.
They have more than enough talent to at least compete.
Why do you say that?
I don't know a ton about hockey, but there's no question in my mind that they're good enough to be 500 right now. They're 0-5-1.
Well, the guy they just got rid of, or who wanted to leave, couldn't stand it anymore, a defenseman. That guy, he still was playing, I'm going to say last year, the dude was still playing 30-some minutes a game. He was your power play. He was your penalty kill. Who did they replace him with, you or me?
Good question.
I mean, I'm
not going to claim to be a hockey expert and understand the depths of the roster, and I certainly don't understand or know much about the free agent market and things like that in the NHL. But the Blackhawks, everything I read heading into this season was they should be a playoff team. They have they made a bunch of improvements. This Kirby Dach guy, in the couple games I watched, looks like he's got all the talent in the world. They're number 3 overall pick from 2 years back. That's been hurt. He looked awesome. And, you get Taves back as well after a year off, and then, you know, you add some other pieces. They spent some money on the new goalie. And
the new old goalie.
Yeah, they look awful. I mean, they look absolutely terrible. They're not even competing. They haven't even had a lead.
I would say the guys the last two or three years, as they've gone downhill, there's got to be 10 teams that are just bigger, faster. Even last year, Patrick Kane. Who's the other little guy in that line? The real little guy that's real good. Not Kirby Doc, the other dude. DeBrinket?
Yeah.
Now, those guys, they could hold their own with just about anybody. They were getting to the point where they were doing double shifts every game. Second line wasn't very good. The third line was awful. And some of these teams had, like, a fourth line that just absolutely annihilated their fourth line. So they had nobody, and this is what the defense... Why do I keep forgetting this guy, the red-headed guy? They're forever to haul.
Duncan Keith?
Yeah. And he's still, you know, 60% of your defense, for God's sake. And then he's gone. The other guy retires. I mean, the two people that they had Shaw and a couple other guys they brought for stopgap, they're all gone. So they get this aging goalie out of the blue, hoping that they could stopgap something there. They're still 6-7 players short. They're not even close. I don't know what these guys were writing. I don't even know that much about hockey, and I'm going, I don't see 6-7 guys walking in here. I mean, they're just way short.
Yeah, I'm just going by what I read, and, you know, there's 32 teams in the league, so half of the teams make the playoffs, and everything I read said they expect the Blackhawks to make the playoffs.
As a 16th team,
well,
maybe.
Either way, yeah. not to be 0-6 through the first six games and not even hold a lead.
Well, I mean, there are people... Where do they find these guys that are these coaches? I was listening to the Bears coaches in the room before the game yesterday. You know, I know you're not supposed to badmouth anybody or anything, but every single guy is doing the best he possibly can, and this guy's improving like there's no tomorrow. They're awful. But then the interesting part is this guy, the third-string halfback, who looks like he's really good, that Herbert guy.
Yeah, the rookie.
And so the guy starts talking about, well, you know, he's in a great room. You know, and when you're in a great room, I'm going, what is this? I don't know what coach this was. I'm thinking, okay, all right, now I get it. In today's world, if people don't know this, one of the biggest things, certainly in college, when the guy in, who's the Nike knucklehead that gives all the money to Oregon, what tells his name?
Oh, yeah, what is his name, Phil Knight?
Yeah, he gives all this money. Well, they put this huge practice facility together where every single position had their own room. So they could all, what are you doing? I play poker with three people if it's the tackle room? I don't know. But so everybody has their own, I guess, films and all this other stuff. So when they start talking about the best room, evidently that's the halfback room, right? I mean, what are they?
Well, that's why every NFL team is broken up by position. You have your linebackers, your defensive backs, your defensive line, offensive line room, your running backs room, your receivers room, your quarterbacks room, and then obviously then they have bigger groups where you have your offense meets and your defense meets, and then you have your special teams and all that
stuff. And this all helps, I assume?
Well, I mean, they got 50 frickin' coaches on those teams.
Well, that's true.
They got to do something.
I went to years and years ago, I went when Joliet Catholic was really good and Marist was not so hot. I go to a game who's homecoming or something, and the Joliet Catholic has all these guys that they couldn't all be getting paid, but everybody, they must have had, I don't know how many guys, 20 guys on the sidelines that were like, must have been guys who played before and couldn't wait to go back and, you know, bask in the reflected glory or something. And they're all wearing black turtlenecks. And it was at a point where every time the offense left the field, there was a guy to yell at like every single player that he saw, you know. I mean, at some point, so let me get this straight. If all of a sudden there's a play where the halfback lines up in the slot, now does he have to go down the hall to the receiver's room and have that conversation, or he can stay in his own room?
Good question.
Do you think we're overthinking this just a tad?
I'm not overthinking anything, but I do know that, they do break off into the different position groups, and they run their drills separately in some instances, and then some they get together with the line and they do 7-on-7, and then there's other things, you know, they work out together and challenge each other because they're all lifting different amounts of weight, so it'd be silly to pit the wide receiver up against the left tackle in the weightlifting group. And then they break down film differently too. Why would you have your running backs break down film with your defensive linemen? They're looking at different things and they're not even on the field at the same time. So it makes sense.
Well, I suppose. I mean, they serve different chow. I mean, you know.
Well, that's a good question. I'm sure they eat different amounts. Well, I bet the left tackle eats more than the quarterback.
Well, how do the Bears, I can understand how they pick up this horrible schedule and how did they get on national TV so much when they suck?
Well, they're always going to get on national TV a lot because they're, you know, the second largest market or third largest market. Probably the second because I don't think anyone in LA cares. So they're always going to be on TV. And if you split New York in half, then you could argue Chicago's the largest market, actually. So they're always going to get on TV. But the fact that they have this really tough schedule, is frustrating and a little bit perplexing. Now, they did make the playoffs last year, even though they were only 8-8. So you are going to get a little bit tougher schedule for making the playoffs. This is a brutal stretch, and I don't think they're going to get out of it with any chance of making the playoffs.
Well, they pick up the AFC, when I say picked up, everybody, for those that don't know, everybody in your division, so even if you have a tough schedule, in theory, it's the same as the rest of the guys in your division. So everybody in your division, they're playing the NFC West, right? This year.
I think that's right.
So they're playing the Cardinals, they're playing the Seahawks, playing the Rams, and they
happens to be one of the best divisions.
Right, but even so, the Packers have to play the same people.
Right.
Then they're playing the AFC East, right, which means the Ravens, Cincinnati, the Bengals. They must be having the Giants in here someplace.
No, they're NFC West, and they're...
It's the AFC Central.
It's the AFC that has the Steelers and the Ravens and
that's the East.
It's not the East. It's it might be the North. I'm trying to pull up the standings here.
Yeah, I'm looking at
the AFC East is the Jets and the Patriots and that.
That's right.
Yeah, it's the AFC North. Yeah, so it's the Bengals who they beat somehow because the Bengals look really good now. They're 5-2. The Ravens who are really good, the Browns who are good, and then the Steelers who are 500. So they happen to be playing, you know, arguably the two best divisions in the NFL just by the random draw of who you play that year. But the rest of your division, like you said, is playing the same guys too.
Well, but now you've got the games they picked up though are the Buccaneers,
which
Packers don't have to play.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. Why the Bears?
But there's one other team. Is it the Giants or
it's the Giants who are not good.
Right, so those are the two extra games.
Yeah, so one is the Super Bowl champs, and then the other is the Giants.
And now look at us. On December, we're not done with this, for God's sake. We're on December, where am I here? December 26th, 3:05, they're playing the Seahawks.
Yep.
December 20th, they're playing the Vikings, 7:15. That's another national game. And they're playing the Packers on another national game. Good Lord.
So they have three national games left. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
well, no, the Steelers too.
Yeah, that's right.
Four.
So the nice thing is this week they host the 49ers, and the 49ers are not as good as we thought they were going to be going into the season. And the Bears, it's a winnable game. I'm not saying they're going to win, but it's a winnable game.
They're almost as bad.
So they're pretty equal to the Bears, I would say. So, and it's at Soldier Field, so that one, which we thought was going to be probably a loss, could be a win. The next week, they're at Pittsburgh, who also isn't quite as good as we thought they were going to be. Now, I don't think the Bears are going to win that game, but that becomes somewhat of a winnable game. So, now you have these two games sort of in the middle of this sort of onslaught that look winnable. Then you play the Ravens, who I don't think they can beat the Ravens. Then they go at Detroit, which, you know, they could win, but Detroit has been in pretty much every game this season.
And they don't beat Detroit. They're 0-6.
Detroit is 0-7 now.
Seven, right.
But they're the best 0-7 team I've ever seen. They should, I mean, if you've watched their games, they should be 3-4.
But they know just how to lose.
They know just how to lose, but they really should be 3-4. And up in Detroit, I could see them, you know, saying, hey, wow, this is a chance.
This is the Thanksgiving game.
This is a game we have a legit shot of winning.
Wait, there's another national team. This is 5. It's 11:30 in the morning on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so that's, I could see the Bears losing that game.
Now, four days after they play the Ravens, you're right, they could get clobbered.
Absolutely, and it's a game that everyone gets up for because it's Thanksgiving and they know everyone's watching, and I could see the Lions, especially if the Lions don't have a win yet, saying, you know, this is our win, let's go get it. And then they play the Cardinals, for our Arizona listeners, who are the best team in the NFL right now through seven games. They're 7-0, and they've really dominated pretty much everyone.
Then the Packers,
which is a guaranteed loss.
And the Vikings, I think, are better than the Bears now.
I do too. And then at Seattle, who lost Russell Wilson, he might be back by then.
I was going to say, it could be the game he comes back.
If he's back, then the Bears are dead. It's a tough schedule, and the fact that they beat the Bengals, I still don't know how they did that, because they're really good.
Any Given Sunday, wasn't that the movie?
That's right. They really have to win this 49ers game to get back to 500 and to stop the bleeding and then, you know, sort of reassess.
Did you, I don't know if you heard, I was wondering about Atlanta. I want to get your thoughts on the series here in a second, but regarding the Cubs, they had been up 3-1 in 7-game series 5 times in the last like 25 years, and they lost all of them till this one. I had no idea that was the case.
I didn't know that either. I knew that I remembered them blowing a couple series. I didn't know it was that many.
Yeah, so this was either going to be their fifth or their sixth. That's hard to do. You almost have to try and do that.
It was strange because I remember this season. So I thought the Braves over the last couple of years, with all the young, really good young players that they had, I remember thinking, like, these guys are going to be a powerhouse. Like, they reminded me a lot of the 2014, 2015 Cubs, where you could see a lot of the young guys coming together. And you know, you could sort of see what was coming. And I thought the same about the Braves. Well, they did make the playoffs, I think, the last 2 years. And then this year, for some reason, they got off to a horrible start. And I think maybe even all the way up to near the All-Star break, they were like below 500.
They were saying, I think they said August 6th they were 500.
Yeah, and I was like, what is going on with those guys? I mean, did they tune out their manager or what? Because they have way too much talent to be this bad. And they happened to be in a bad division. I mean, if they would have been in the NL West or the NL Central, they never would have made the playoffs. But they were in a bad division, so they were able to sort of stay within striking distance. And then they got hot the last 2 months, and then now they look like the team everyone thought they were going to be going into the season.
Well, that's why, you know, on paper, them and the Cardinals, the Cubs, at the same time, those teams took off. And these guys picked up Jorge Soler, and they picked up a couple other guys.
They picked up Jock Peterson from the Cubs, too, right. Who's been one of their best players.
Right, so they pick up a few guys and go that direction. Meanwhile, the Cubs... And I know they, with the contracts, with the money side of it, the Cubs had, you know, it's a different world, I guess, in today's baseball. Not I guess, I mean, it is a different world, but if you look at purely just the talent on the teams, on August 1st, the Cubs were right there with the Cardinals and pretty much right there with these guys. If they would have added instead of subtracted, it could have been that, but they wanted no part of it. Probably because of the contracts, you know.
Well, it's interesting. So the contracts were the main factor, and they assumed if we're going to trade these three guys, then we're going to be terrible. What they didn't know is that Schwindel and Wisdom and Ortega were actually going to be just as good as those three guys, if not better, in the final 2 months. And if they would have kept, you know, all of their bullpen guys and some of their depth and then plugged those guys in, they might have actually got hot like the Cardinals did. Who knows?
Well, the thing they really did, absolutely buried him. It wasn't, well, Bryant could play all the positions, but I mean, like you say, the other two guys are, you know, pretty much every bit as good. I just was watching these games, and they'd be in there. The starters would keep you in. Well, the starters weren't that good either, but they'd keep you in there until the fifth inning, and then all of a sudden it's 3-2, and then it's like 12-3.
Yeah,
the bullpen was bad. I mean, it could have been you and me out there in a bullpen.
But the starters were really bad too. I mean, Hendricks wasn't Hendricks, and then they had no one behind him. So I thought that just the pitching in general was really bad, and that's if they want to compete this year, which they say they do, which I guess we'll believe it when we see it, but pitching's got to be number one.
Well, what do you suppose is going to happen to their season ticket? After, you know, first you had the COVID year, now you had this. I can't send in that check. I mean, some corporations probably will, but I mean, they got to be losing some people.
I imagine they are.
I got to believe it was hard. I believe it was hard filling the skybox. Anyway, SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 36. Back, we'll talk to Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 450. NASDAQ futures up 36. Dow futures up 8. So you know, slightly to the upside here, but positive. Nikkei down 204. That's 0.7%. Shanghai up 27.7% the other way. And Hang Seng up 5 flat. So I don't know what, I'm not so sure what that tells you over there. HSBC earnings beat expectations. So I guess that's good. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 38.2%, FTSE up 29.4%, CAC down 13.2%. As a way of review, on Friday, the Dow was up 73, S&P down 5, NASDAQ down 125, so a mixed day on Friday. Bonds, 1.66 unchanged on the 10-year. The Bund, minus 0.09, that's the same as it was Friday morning. In Japan, if you round it up, positive 0.10, actually it's 0.098, but close enough. UK, 1.17. Oil, up 92 cents, 84.68. That's probably, it's not a high, it's close to a high of this run. Brent up 77 cents, 86.30. Natural gas up 28 cents, 5.56. Wow, what a trader this thing has become if you could only trade it without more money than you got. Traded like 6.09 down to 4.98. Now it's 5.56. Matty, you sell 5 futures, which is the biggest trade you've ever made. When it gets down to 4.99, you buy 10, and now you sell the extra 5 right here. You're done for the year, buddy.
There you go.
Just saying. RBOB up 2 cents, 2.51, as I had to put a big drink in the Suburban for, at what, 3.54. that hurt. And I think you got a 42-gallon tank. Goal up 860, 1802 back, blazing through this 1800-hour number. We'll see if it stays there. Silver up 6 cents, 24.51. Copper up a penny, 4.51. And we've got Bitcoin up 2,500 bucks to 62,978 back to where it was in the middle of last week. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have some nasty weather that we've had for the last 24 hours, and it's going to continue for the better part of the day today as well. In fact, there's a wind advisory and a lakeshore flood advisory that will remain in effect until 7 p.m. tonight. Large and battering waves of 12 to 16 feet are expected. Waves of this magnitude, of course, will result in shoreline erosion and dangerous conditions near the lakefront, in addition to flooding. So not good from a weather perspective, and it's certainly slowing down our traffic this morning. No major accidents to report on any of the expressways right now, but some heavier traffic volumes than normal for the 6 o'clock hour. We did have an earlier jackknife semi on 8094 just across the border on the Indiana side, but that apparently is all clear. That was on the westbound side, but some significant congestion from that. As far as crashes are concerned, we have one in the city at Peterson and Pulaski, and then we have one way out in northwestern Elgin, Route 31 at Highland Avenue. There's a crash, but everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, rainy and cold, a high of 53. We'll also have high winds as well. Right now it's rainy and 51 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 90 today. Right now it's clear and 63. In sports, not a good day for the Bears. They're now below 500 as they went down to Tampa and were smacked by Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. 38-3 was the final in that one. No highlights for the Bears, I can tell you that. The offense was bad, the defense was bad, and everything in between. Justin Fields had one of his worst games of his early career. 22 of 32 for 184 yards, but most of that came in garbage time. No touchdowns, three interceptions. He also fumbled three times, losing two of them. He finished with a 44 QB rating, which is abysmal. Khalil Herbert was the lone highlight. The rookie running back had another strong week for the third week in a row. 18 carries, 100 yards. That's a 5.6 yard average. And he had a long of 29. He was very good. But no one on the defense stood out, and no one on the offense stood out. As the Bears are now 3-4, and they'll welcome the 49ers into town next week, as we talked about last segment. 49ers played Sunday Night Football last night. They lost to the Colts in a rainstorm, 30-18. But the Arizona Cardinals are the darlings of the NFL season here through seven games. They're now 7-0, Chief, after they blew out Houston 31-5. In hockey, Blackhawks are 0-5-1 through six games as they were doubled up by the Red Wings at home 6-3. Bulls were off. Bulls are 3-0. They're in action tonight taking on the Raptors, 6:30 p.m. Central Time tip-off as the Bulls look to stay perfect. Chief.
That's when you say that the Hawk games have not been as close as the score would indicate. You also missed out on the Chicago Hydrological Survey here as it's raining all over the damn place. And Hart Ditch in Munster, normally 1 foot deep, is now 7 feet deep.
Wow.
So if that's right next door to the Weber house, that's a problem.
It's not good.
1 foot.
Although I'm
seven.
On the third floor, but that still affects the building.
Well, what if it like flooded your hot water and all the other stuff? Or the wife would not be happy
no,
with you. It would be your
not.
Fault.
Not to mention our storage unit in the basement.
Yeah, well, yeah, well, yeah. If I forgot all about that. So there you go. I was in Indiana. John, how are you?
I'm doing okay, Tom. How about you?
Doing fine with your... You're weaseling out last night. You missed a nice dinner up at Darrell's.
Yeah, I'm still limping around today, but I figured it would be a good time. I'm sorry.
Well, you missed a great ride home on a Kennedy in a pouring rain. That was a lot of fun. Plus, it meant I had to stay away from the booze, which made it even worse. So, anyway, but it was brutal driving home. Man, it was nasty. But Saturday, I didn't go to the game, but I just wandering around. The world is an interesting place. I walk into. I like stopping in Bass Pro Shop. That place, people are nice in there. So I wander in, and the guy accosts me. We're going down apple picking for Dan's squeezing this Saturday, man. We ended up with 400 pounds of apples at this great little orchard. These old Polish people own the place. Pawlowski's Orchard or something. And the stuff is spectacular. There's all kinds of people down there picking. All kinds of families. Every shape and color all down picking apples. Very nice. And, so you just reach up and grab them, and you know you can get 100 pounds in a bag in like a couple of minutes. Anyway, the So I wander into the Bass Pro Shop, and the guy, of course, accosts me for the credit card, right? Oh, you gotta join the Bass Club. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm a Bass Club kind of guy, but so he was very persuasive, and, you get like three prizes for opening up a credit card. So the only reason why, that I'm gonna do this is because our friend Kevin O'Neill comes on 2 days a week and is our consultant along with Mr. Weber regarding privacy and credit cards has been after me to get a credit card that I use only in case I make an online purchase and ratchet the, you know, your limit down to like $1,000. So even if you get totally hacked, somebody can only grab a G from you instead of like 12 or something like the other credit limits are. So I'm almost ready to do it, but I don't, right? So I grabbed a shirt or something, and I go to the, and I get some candy for the office, which of course didn't make it through the apple picking, but the family saw it and grabbed it, so it never made it down here. So I get to the front thing, and of course there's this delightful young lady checking out. How come you didn't get a credit card? So I melted, and I got the credit card, right? It's unbelievable. They give it to you right there. You actually get the card, and they go through the whole routine. We get all of this, Jen. For the stuff you buy, you know, you got your normal, you know, stupid credit charge. It actually was like 17 or 18% instead of 30. All the crap you buy at Bass Pro Shop, it's like 7%. So if you went and actually bought the Bass boat, they're ready to finance you at like 7%. Or I guess I went to the gun shop and you know, bought a whole bunch of guns, which I'm not ready to do. But the Cabela's, it works there too. The Cabela's in Indiana is like, the guy's supposed to be one of the best gunsmiths around. You're dealing with antique guns and everything else. So in case I ever want to become, get an armory, I can do it at 7% instead of 25 or whatever, 17. So they were all, is there that much money, Maddie, in these credit cards that it's that up to them? So then they gave me $20 off on the shirt I bought. Like, so I got a knife, a hat, a real nice coffee cup, which of course Audrey grabbed, and then her friend Sarah grabbed the knife, so I'm left with the funky hat, and I got to keep the $20 I got off on my pants or shirt, whatever the hell I bought. Are these cards worth it? I mean, it's with,
It seems like there's a resurgence in these store credit cards, and it must be because they can save on processing fees. I mean, if they have somebody else who services the card, you know, there's a whole bunch of places that.
Well, the Cards Credit Union One. It's or Capital One. The Cards Capital One.
If you have a card that's good only at, you know, one place. I mean, some of them have crossover stuff too, point systems and all this stuff and related purchases. But I think these retailers figure this is a way of stimulating business, but also maybe keeping a bigger share of it at the cash register. So I've noticed that too. I got a thing when I bought something at Walgreens the other day, and you give them the card, you know, the rewards thing, and the thing immediately pops up and says, you know, you're pre-approved for a Walgreens MasterCard. Are you interested? They're like, no. But, you know, I think they're doing it, you know, at point of sale, it seems. And as you say, you can get these in no time at all. So it's kind of seductive to some people.
Well, you had to get the hat, right?
Apparently to Chief, it's seductive. Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. If it wasn't for the cashier, I made it past the guy, but I couldn't get past her. I mean, what can I tell you? But I mean, you know, of course she puts my stuff there, puts it in the bag, nicest bag. But I mean, Manny, what's the economic? So I get 2% back at the, which, yeah, I mean, there's other places they have cash back more. And 1% of, it's actually a Capital One MasterCard. So what do they give, you know, the economic, what do they give Bass Pro Shops? I mean, obviously, so if I get 2% back, now it is, or 1%, now does the merchant eat that whole 2 or 1, or what is that? I mean, or if I got the one card from Costco that I get 3% off on gasoline. Does that mean that the station eats the whole 3%?
I don't know.
I thought you knew all the economics of this.
I don't have anything to do with that.
All right. No. Well, you're just in the security end.
Yeah.
So if somebody steals 3%, that's when you come in over the hill like the Lone Ranger.
Well, we have people that do that, sure.
All right. I mean,
you're the one that signed up for it.
But I mean, the curiosity, I mean, what's the markup on gas where you can give somebody 3 or 5% your credit card, please? I mean, is the markup 20%? I don't know. It seems like a lot to give, doesn't it?
Well, places like Costco, I mean, at least as far as I know, that you used to have to use a debit card or American Express for a while, and they got rid of that arrangement.
Well, no, they went to Citigroup.
Yeah.
Matter of fact,
it was whatever, you know, if you have to deal with MasterCard or Visa or whatever for people just coming off the street, I bet they lose. They lose big enough where they don't want that. And it may be that they're willing to eat, you know, everything on the gasoline purchases with a Costco card, just as a marketing thing.
Well, some of these places are 2% everywhere you go. As a matter of fact, if you went to Jack Gibbons on the south side, I had my Costco American Express, then I've had my regular American Express that I've had for, you know, eons. I think I'm a member since 77 or something like that. And they wouldn't take the Costco one because they had to kick them 3% back. They said, we'll take the regular one. We only got to give them 1% or something.
Huh.
So it was kind of weird. But, you know, my my brother, who, you know, he's half Irish too, so he holds grudges. But he had, you know, we've got the business Costco for the people who work at PTI. We've got the business Sam's. We've got the business everything for everybody here. And but it always ends up me buying stuff for the offices instead of them using the card. I don't know how that works, but the thought of anybody like walking in with stuff from Sam's that I don't bring in, you know, Maddie knows the story about that. Anyway, so when American Express switched to Citigroup, which was a huge deal, remember American Express stock, how much it went down, Jen?
Right.
Because that was a massive customer for them. I mean, for those that don't remember, the only credit card you could use at Costco was American Express. Your Visa or your MasterCard was don't bring out no stinking cards, right? So anyway, they shove everybody over to Citigroup. Somehow in the meantime, and I don't think it was ever really published, they got hacked pretty bad. Then they met, you knew about that, somehow or another, it got all messed up. Well, my brother ends up getting, and that's the only card that he had at the time. Well, he had something else, but it was nowhere near close. And all of a sudden, he's getting stuff in the mail, like we just mailed your credit card, like to Florida or someplace. So somewhere in the switchover from American Express to Citigroup, they got all his stuff. So he, to this day, he won't go near Costco or an American Express. He's not sure who he should be pissed off at, but he knows one of them. And, he got totally co-opted in the transfer. He never did anything. He never said yes or no. And in the switchover, I think he had two cards being sent to Florida. So, man, if his card would have landed in Florida at some address, does somebody get to use it like once, or did he? I mean, how does that even work? Does he get the bill from an address in Florida? How would he ever pay that? Have to pay that?
Good question. Yeah, the experience I had when my card got hacked, they said I got a text immediately saying, "Hey, someone just spent $440 in Maryland. Is that you?" And I said, "No," and then within 6 hours, it was refunded to my account.
That's
all I know about it.
So yeah, I mean it's a. But yet people do nothing but try and make these cards up, and yet I don't know. It must be worth it to them somehow. Anyway, Jan, we've got the West Coast getting annihilated with rain. We're getting annihilated with rain. And, of course, they got some guy from the West Coast who immediately says, man, look at what's going on with global warming. Like, it never rained before we had global warming? What are we doing with this? You missed out last night because I was having a discussion with Daryl about term limits, and I know our man on the show, Jeff Joseph, is all over that. And the thing about, I don't know, you know the language better than me. When you have an argument, or you have a goal like that, there's a name for it. I know you may be right. I mean, we may be having global warming that we're causing, and I actually probably believe that's pretty much true. And I think that it's probably not a bad idea for some term limits in some places. But how would anybody, right now, with what we see going on, Daryl, I was happy to be telling him this last night. I said, Daryl, what are you talking about? We can't have any solutions that, okay, everybody agrees with you, and Jeff Joseph is on this too. Let's agree with you. All right, we're going to have term limits. We're going to grandfather in, of course, some guys. You're never going to do it the whole way. So what do? We just put the law through and we sit on our ass for 15 years and see if it works? I mean, what is a solution to anything? Well, the problems we're having, they're coming at us every 30 seconds or every 30 minutes. How is anything that long term? It's like, let's increase third grade education. Okay. So when a person in third grade who's 10 years old, when he gets to be 40 and he's in Congress, maybe he'll be better. It's 30 years from now. I mean, these are such slow solutions. Are they even any good? I mean, yes, we should be doing something to take care of our planet. We got nowhere else to go. I get that part. But, I mean, telling somebody else to not do something tomorrow so you can do something different and put him out of business the way this is being handled, I don't see that changing anything, do you, in a short term?
Not at all. It's what's always struck me as duplicitous about the whole climate debate is that even if you were to do all the absolutes that are always being pushed, well, we got to get zero carbon emissions by this date, no more fossil fuel, you know, gas engines and cars, whatever. We have to go down to zero. Why? So that the third world countries that are going to get a break on this can belch out as much as they want. If this were really about saving the planet, you wouldn't want anybody doing this. But the fact that we're going to be selective about who we prohibit from doing it and who we encourage and allow, you know, make it economically necessary for other people to do it, you haven't really fixed anything. All you've done is allocate, you know, businesses to go elsewhere and to make it really hard on people here who, for whatever other faults they have, generally, you know, they try not to waste too much. You don't want to, you know, just be profligate in how you treat things, but if you just make a good faith effort at recycling or not wasting water or whatever, you're still going to be punished and deprived of a living standard that you've become used to so that somebody else can continue to do in spades what you're not allowed to do anymore. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Well,
I do get it, but, you know.
Well, the place by us, that General Iron Joint, which was a scrap facility. Now, first, so here you have a situation where we absolutely want to use scrap metal. For those that don't know, the near north side of Chicago, there's an industrial area on Goose Island, although that technically wasn't on Goose Island, but along the river to where you have this industrial area, and actually, was it about 20 years ago, Jan? They actually rezoned it so you couldn't put, like, housing in there because they wanted to keep it industrial because Chicago didn't want to lose its whole industrial base. Correct? It was something along those lines. 20 years ago?
Canneries and all these dirty businesses.
Yeah, dirty businesses. So a scrap facility is not the cleanest thing on earth. Plus, you've got a bunch of people that are all night long driving around alleys, grabbing stuff all lined up in the morning. Even though none of these people ever caused any problems, they're not the people you want in your neighborhood, right? So we are all over the idea that we want to recycle. So here's a recycling facility. Now, wait a minute. It's too close to my house, right? So let's get it on the south side. So, of course, people on the south side get pissed off. What are you doing to us? And so, I mean, it was, like I say, not the cleanest, but it is amazingly cleaner than a steel mill, right? We're not even on the same planet with that, right? So now we like the idea, but we don't like this place near me. Okay, so now we've got your places like Apple using the screens and those kinds of people, and all these other guys doing stuff. Now they're in China. Now that's out of sight, out of mind. So we're going to tell the guy down the block, oh my God, if you burn your leaves, you're killing us all. But it's okay if we buy all our phones from China because we don't give a crap. Now, does anybody really think that if the new General Iron puts all this stuff in the air on the south side, that's okay because we're not near there? I mean, if we're really worried about Spaceship Earth, we'd be worried wherever it went. But right now we've got, I mean, and Trump tried to do some of this ineffectively, but he wanted to bring some of these businesses back from China. First of all, the people that are in China don't want anybody here competing with them. You think Apple really wants a phone manufacturer in the U.S. when they seem to have this China thing pretty well set up, where they're losing the same labor? So everything we do plays right into the hands of the people that have now this overseas connection. Not only can they pollute whatever they damn well please, they pay people enough, and they use slave labor, but we don't care. But now we can point our finger at that guy driving a bigger car and say, God, this guy's a bleep. Look at. So where'd you go last week? Oh, I was in Florida. Well, you were on a plane. Well, yeah, but that doesn't count. I mean, the way this is all being played out is so human to me. is that the right term?
All too human.
It's all too human.
It is.
How's that for definition, Manny? It's all too human. What are we doing? But you want to be, the game here is not really to have less pollution or anything else. It's to stop your competitors from doing it so you can do it some other place and to get government on your side. I mean, the idea that somehow Tesla gets to sell $400 million worth of credits. I mean, for those of you that don't know, when you see credit, Tesla makes some money, they'd never make a dime if they weren't selling these credits given by the government, because they allegedly save whatever pollution because it's electric, right? But there's no thought for where the electric is being made or how it's being made, or the batteries and how they were made some other place, and how much pollution went up someplace because the batteries are mostly lithium. But right now, these guys got the idea that they get these credits that they get to sell to General Motors and all these other people. Here's an example. The whole idea, I don't know if we should go through this or not, but what do they call it? The pollution, there's an economic way of doing this. We say, all right, everybody's polluting everybody, everything. You'd say, well, that's a bad idea. Well, we can stop everybody from pollution, but then we wouldn't have any economy. And, oh, by the way, we wouldn't have anything to eat. So that would be a problem. So the economic way of doing it, if people weren't so friggin' crooked in this country, the economic way of doing it would be to say, we're going to have these pollution credits where everybody, for one unit of pollution, whatever it is, you know, 2 tons of carbon dioxide or something, there's going to be a fee for it. And these things can be traded. So the idea is, if Matty Weber, if he's making something that's really, really valuable, he can actually buy these pollution credits from somebody else. Somebody else who decides, say you give everybody's house who has a tree, we're going to give you one pollution credit for not burning your leaves. So you can either, or for burning your leaves. All right. So, but if you don't burn them, you can sell it to somebody else. Well, the theory is that only the most valuable stuff, if the auction market worked properly, that you would always, it's never worth that much to you to burn your leaves versus bag them up. So you would be able to sell this to, say, General Motors. Now, when they're polluting, at least they got a car to show for it, and they're selling it for 40 grand or a truck, so they're making 10 grand on the car. So it's way worth it for them to buy Matty Weber's pollution credit for that. So that's the theory behind it. I got to believe, John, that is so co-opted, so screwed up all along the line. Do you think it even resembles what the theorists originally started to do?
No, and it's, of course, rife with fraud. And it dodges the issue. If you're really concerned about climate, then I would say it doesn't matter where this stuff's taking place or even in what concentration. But if you allow it to happen at the same level or to increase, it shows that you suppressed its occurrence in certain places, that that's somehow a victory, that you're going to turn around, you know, global warming or whatever the phrase du jour is to me just a complete fraud. The pinning it to climate, first of all, is obviously a way of getting away from what you really want people to do, is to be good stewards and not waste stuff, reuse what you can, but don't be, you know, insane about how you consume stuff and deprive other people of it. But it's now turned into something where we can change the atmosphere to suit ourselves, and we're blaming ourselves for why it is what it is, and we have the way to fix it. To me, it's just like, you know, completely nutty logic. There's no way you can predict how any of this would relate to any improvement, and you find somebody who would twist it in a way to make it advantageous for company A versus company B to get this result, which is always a moving target, by the way. And when you talk about climate has always changed. I mean, as long as it's been a climate, it's been different from month to month and from year to year. And there are trends that go up and down, and I think have to assume we don't have complete control over it. We may have some influence, but we've taken a position we can control it. We just ideally turn it into something where we meet a number that we've set for ourselves, and aren't we good at what we do? And it's like, what a shame.
Well, we shouldn't be able to figure out some of the stuff, though, John. I mean, I'm all for all this stuff, actually. I mean, I don't really think that. I think that every single year we should be getting better and better, which we have been. But I don't see how General Motors, if they meet all the standards on mileage and everything else, why they should have to buy something from Elon Musk, I have no idea, to the tune of like $100 million. I mean, in terms of, I to be honest, I don't understand why we ever stopped using glass bottles that you paid a deposit for.
That was the best, Tom.
Yeah, I don't get that at all.
That was money you just threw away.
But I mean, now
we used to wash them out religiously, you know, rinse them out, take them back, exchange them. My high school, that was all you could get soft drinks in, was glass bottles, the big old heavy things. But that was, to me, you know, it's a It's like why, you know, we had recycling. We didn't call it recycling in those days, but it was, you know, it put a, you know, price tag on doing it in a negligent or stupid way, which is, you know, a minuscule tax when you think of what the deposit was, but it was enough to make you want to do it. It's like putting a quarter in the shopping cart, and you have to get the quarter back when you return the shopping cart to where you got it. I mean, that's the only solution. You don't really have to have people hauling carts in and out. So,
well, it's probably more of a reminder to people. But yeah, I mean, the idea, do we really need all these plastic bags? Could we have some paper bags? Or, you know, I mean, yeah, we don't need all that stuff. I mean, there's common sense with things we can do, but I just wonder the people who gave the original studies that said, oh no, it's, you're using more water and soap cleaning the bottles than you are if you just made plastic bottles. I don't know. Was that some guy who was in the plastic bottle business? I mean, do we really need every single one of the vaccine, or not every single one, but a lot of the vaccine studies are being financed by Pfizer? I mean, do I want the idea that in the COVID world, this is the stuff I see, which is so crazy, that the idea that even though we're supposed to stay 6 feet apart every other place, it was okay to sit next to somebody on an airplane, and American Airlines funded the study through Harvard, and Harvard came up with that conclusion. How could it possibly be okay in an airplane and not okay in an elevator? I mean, are we that
stupid? Supposedly it came out of some high school student in Arizona science fair project. The idea of there being a 6 foot safety zone, if you stay that far away from somebody, you reduce the chance of getting anything, which has turned out to be ludicrous. Yeah, we're still doing it. You still see people enforcing it, but for certain people, as you say. Not
actually, you know where that came
of
from?
The greasy spoons or anything else.
You know where that came from? And I had them on the net. I had both studies, and now, of course, I can't find them because they've been shredded, I think, from the net, or I'm too stupid to be able to find it, but the original study on infectious diseases, now I think SARS actually is more infectious, but I'm not SARS, COVID, well, SARS probably was too. The original study back in the tuberculosis days was that you had to be within 3 feet of somebody to catch TB from them. These are back in like 1918, 1917, and I don't know who did the studies back then. I think it might have been Harvard then, but that was the original number. So back in the, whenever Bush 1 or 2, one of them was in office, they redo this every year. There's always a manual for what to do if there's a virus that shows up and everything. Matter of fact, one lady was on TV, and every president has had the manual, like, updated. So she had, like, a stack of about 8 of them. So they pretty much all said the same thing. And we didn't follow any of those things this time with this thing, our CDC. Any one of these studies that goes all the way back to Kennedy's time, we didn't follow virtually any of the stuff in there. Anyway, the story was that, well, the study was how far would you have to stay away from somebody on an airplane, and it came back same kind of TB study, said in an airplane you needed to be 6 feet away because it was an enclosed area instead of the 3 in the original study. So the Bush administration picks up that 6 foot number is now, if something like this ever happened, that's how far away people should stay to stay out of harm's way, meaning germ harm way. Well, of course, then it comes back to the airlines were the ones that the airplane was the one that expanded in the first place. Then they come up with another study and said, oh no, it's not 6 feet on planes, it's like 0 feet on planes, but 6 feet everywhere else. John, you couldn't write fiction like this. It would go from 3 to 6 on a plane to 0 on a plane to 6 everywhere else. I'm like, but I do think that COVID actually is more contagious than TB, to be honest with you. So, I mean, it's not all wrong, but how the airlines ever got the idea, and yet everybody's sitting right next to each other in a plane, and either they've covered them all up, or there hasn't been any big outbreak on planes that I've heard of, have you? I mean, I know people are wearing a mask and stuff, but still, if you're sitting next to somebody for 5 hours wearing a mask, it isn't doing any good. And it's not like you're not breathing around a darn thing. I mean, all you do is walk into a store this weekend with your mask on if you wear glasses, and immediately you know air is getting out around it because your glasses are all steamed up, right?
Well, I have to take my glasses off when I've got the mask on, Thomas, and of course I can't read anything.
Well, that's even better. You don't even know the prices.
It's enough to everything, I guess.
That's even better. You don't know the prices. So, so Jan, what if we have your hero Jack Dorsey? By the way, you got the same kind of facial hair as he does.
Like, oh, yeah, his is much more unkempt, Tom.
God.
He looks pretty raggedy in pictures I've seen.
Yeah, but your name is, you're not just John. I mean, it's who you are. You got to say John Flynn. He's just Jack. You know who he is. He's like Pele. He's like Yao. You know, those kind of guys.
Ronaldo. Madonna.
Yeah, Madonna, Ronaldo. I mean, you know, get that one name thing. But he's talking now about this hyperinflation. I don't think up exactly what he said here, but I don't know that it's going to be hyper, but all of a sudden now I have to believe every place I was this weekend, that was a topic of conversation. Is it just the topic because everybody's talking about it, or is this something we're really going to have a problem with? And, I mean, I've been, you know, beating the drum on inflation now for quite a while, but I mean, I don't know that it's going to be. Looking at the money supply numbers, I think we top out at maybe a couple of months that'll be maybe a 1%, 1.5% on the on a monthly, because we're back down to about 10% money supply growth in an economy that's not growing at all, in my opinion. So usually the number you'll look for is the difference between the growth in the economy and the growth in the money supply. So we've had a 20% growth in the last, well, actually got it. I did some work on this in the last, in the 12 years before COVID, going back 2008, well, 11 years, we averaged about 8 to 8.5% a year growth in the money supply, which is really, really high for an economy that was growing maybe 1% or 2% over that time period. So which means that you're pushing a 6-7% inflation right out of the gate. And if you look at where it all went, you know, housing a little bit, but mostly medicine, mostly higher education, those kinds of things. If you look at where it went, those grew dramatically. It was not general inflation, it was in those areas. Mainly because the price of gas and everything stayed way down. Now it's becoming general inflation, so what should we expect? We should expect, just by the old formula, we should expect a huge spike that we're getting right now because of all the money was put in 6 to 8 months ago, a year ago, because there's that much of a lag. It's a 6-month lag, usually, from the money going in the system to the prices going up. We should expect inflation somewhere in the 12 to 15% range for the next year and a half or so, coming down to the 8 to 12% range after that, and pretty much staying there for a while, unless these kids are still putting a bunch of money in, or still like 10% growth. So that's what anybody should expect here, by all the numbers. And I think it's gospel. I mean, it might be off by a percent or two. So you don't need a bunch of guys saying, oh no, it's only going to last a month and we'll be okay, which the Federal Reserve is still their story and they're sticking to it. Or you've got, you know, Jack saying we're going to have hyperinflation. I sure as hell hope, but I don't see like 50% because they're not doing that anymore. I mean, they were doing that for a little while, but they're not doing that now. So, if you look at just the numbers, which have been very predictive the whole way through, those are the numbers I'm seeing. Do you guys disagree with that, or I mean, do you think that's where we are, or what?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if we have or will have hyperinflation, you know, by some definition, before long. The problem I have, Tom, is that, you know, what does Dorsey know about any of this stuff? And the only reason that he's doing this is because somehow this is a message that is productive in some way of thinking, because all of these social media platforms are so careful about what they don't let out, and they all act in unison to freeze out people or viewpoints or whatever. And it's ironclad, and you can't fight it, and it's been upheld. But when stuff wants to be let out, and here he's speaking about something I would say that he knows less than I do, which is that's setting the bar pretty low, because I wouldn't, you know, pretend to be somebody who would use a term like that recklessly. But I guess, you know, he can use it, and it's got an immediate recognition in the media world where, okay, now the word is out there, and now we're going to have to run with it because Dorsey said this. Well, who the hell is Dorsey? And why is he being taken, you know, more seriously than the Fed? Not that the Fed is credible either, but I just think there's a reason why that term has been let loose.
Well, for some reason, Jan, we can't. The people. Let's put it this way: you could clone Milton Friedman, and come back, and he could talk about all the history, the Nobel Prize, the history of monetary policy in the United States, all that stuff. all the stuff that I've read, that Carl's read, the people on the show, and there's people, if you look other places, are pretty darn good at this. I mean, they've all had economics 101 and then some. But nobody cares about them. But Jack's a national name. He's a headline guy. I mean, why did Trump become president? Because he was a headline guy, because he was on TV. Why, when people say, somebody should run for president, it's always somebody, Oprah should run. You know, Clint Eastwood, if he
right,
wasn't 100 years
old. Right, and when you don't want to get run, we shut you down.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, so I'm saying it should be.
What I'm saying is, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but there's no reason why he would be doing this unless he is an opportunist and he's been given this job and to use his name recognition as a way of getting some kind of narrative out there that helps somebody somewhere. And it's not because he knows anything. It's just because he's been told to do this.
No, but if any one of the three guys that just shared the Nobel Prize in economics 2 weeks ago came out and said, if we don't stop our idiocy, we're going to have hyperinflation, Jen, that wouldn't be a headline in the University of Chicago news. Nobody cares about those guys. The fact that they won a Nobel Prize and actually know economics, why would we listen to them? Right? But yet, Jack, if he came out and said something, or Oprah, or God knows who, maybe, what's her name? One of the Kardashians says the price of my dress just went up. That gets a headline.
And that's my point, Tom. This has been the, you know, a point of time where the word is going to be bandied around, you know, in an everyday way. They wouldn't have gotten that kind of, you know, bang had they put it in some kind of academic journal or buried it in some book. But someone wants this out and about and put it in neon lights. So why, I don't know. I couldn't speculate, really. But something has encouraged people to do this and feel like, well, this is what we want people to be thinking about. We want people to be afraid of this now. Maybe it's a good thing that they're afraid of it. I'm not saying it isn't. It's better to recognize it than to pretend it doesn't exist. But something has happened where he's been the point person for it, and I don't get that part of it.
Well, we've had, you know, I think those people have listened to the show since day one, and I know there have been some, and thank you. One of my themes is that everything kind of depends on everything else. If you look at the COVID situation and where we are now, because we had a chance to talk to, my buddies from college, we had a chance to talk to Kevin and all, you know, people that we all met a couple times. And, and by the way, we're going to get the people, Maddie, who wrote in about the blockchain, and how we should get somebody out here to know something. We got just the young lady. She has a company here in Chicago that she started. She's adorable. She's 25 years old, bright as can be. Went to, just happened to go to Notre Dame, and she's got a business now teaching people how to use blockchain.
Nice.
And she's doing very well, and she's be happy to come in. And
she knows a lot about crypto?
Not as much the crypto, but the system all behind it.
Well, that's cool, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, and to say that, I promise if she and I were Kevin, I'll just shut up. And you just turn my mic off, because they don't need me. But she's going to, it's pretty fascinating, some of the stuff that the advances the blockchain are in terms of supply management and inventory management. But it has nothing to do with how much crypto is valued at, right? The Bitcoin or something. But it's a lot of people who buy Bitcoin think they're getting that. By the way, you're not. I hate to break it to you, but you're not. You're getting whatever that thing is. Matter of fact, a guy last week said, we need to decide whether it's a commodity or a stock. And I'm going, how about neither? but anyway, the whole story with this, you know, the global warming piece we're talking about, Jan, and the COVID is sort of the same way. And people don't believe that there's a, what did the term used to be? I'll bring another one. It's on the back of the Webster. There's a yawning credibility gap everywhere. I mean, there's people that have taken every other vaccine that will not be caught dead taking this thing because they don't believe these people from the day one. And you know what, John? They're not believable. Just like the Fed right now has got themselves in a situation where all we did is every place we went, somebody talked about, God, look at the prices are up 20% since the last time I was in this restaurant 3 weeks ago. It's all people. There is, when Esther George comes on and says, oh no, if there really is any inflation, we can fix it in a month. John, nobody believes her. They used to call it a credibility gap. It's yawning, shall we say. And it's the same thing. They don't believe anybody on the COVID. I mean, everybody takes the other vaccines. It's not like, you know, we believe Jonas Salk was a boob, you know. I mean, I don't mean, like Kevin was saying, he goes, I'm getting no one to crap for not taking this vaccine. I just went and got my flu shot. He goes, it's not like I'm against any of this stuff, right? I just don't believe these guys, and I think it's being oversold. Any piece of bad news is being pushed under the rug, is what the guy, and I don't think he's alone with that. Same way with this inflation. You say, why do we have to listen to Jack Dorsey? Because we're not listening to anybody. We're listening to people that we are paying their salaries get up and lie to us. Oh, there is none. It's very, don't worry, it's temporary. It's just, John, I, Esther, get your ass on the show. Get out here and you tell me how much research you've done, and you tell me any other place in the world where an inflation that's been 7 years in coming somehow can be temporary. Point me one example, and I promise I'll shut up forever. Because I don't think she can do it, John.
Of course not. It's like what Lou was talking about on your show last week. You know, the tribalism at work here. But, you know, the people who are the biggest louders and screamers from whatever camp aren't the ones with the expertise. They're not the ones with the, you know, the track record in any of this. But they're media stars. They have talk shows. They appear on talk shows. Or they're like Jack Dorsey that has a huge platform. And they can say pretty much what they want, and the power that they have to get people behind them makes any other competing viewpoint really hard to play catch up, and or to be extinguished if you're Jack Dorsey. I mean, he can decide, I don't want a counter narrative to what I just said, and I'm not going to allow anybody on Twitter to say that kind of stuff. So why would I trust anything Jack Dorsey does say that he pumps out there? It's not just a credibility problem, it's an incredibility problem that I don't believe, you know, when they hold information back, it's unethical, and when they put information out there, it's equally unethical, because it's manufactured to do something, and what it is, you know, we could talk about it great length, but it's not about being fair or honest or making, you know, full disclosure to people at all.
Well, I think what you're saying, John, is the idea that there's none is wrong, but I mean, I just gave the numbers out that I see, and they're fairly simple. And it says, you know, we're going to top out at 15% or so, maybe 16, 17, which is bad, but it's not, my definition of hyperinflation is people want to get paid in the morning so they can go shopping. So because at the end of the day, it's,
you can't afford it. 4 p.m.
Yeah, you can't do it at 4 p.m. But the thing that's scary, Jen, and a lot of things are scary. I was listening to our friend Eric, our contributor Eric May, is a professor over at Columbia College, and they're going on strike, or they've authorized a strike, because I think Maddie and you and I were listening together. I think they're looking for, they haven't had a contract. Correct me if I'm wrong, Maddie. I think in 3 years, now they're looking for a 3% raise. And not any increase in their hospitalization, whatever they have to kick in. And I'm sitting there going, a 3% raise? They need a 3% raise every 6 months. What's going on right now? I can't believe my phone isn't ringing. Well, I can because, you know, nobody likes us, Jan, but, I can't believe I'm not a consultant. Because how many people are alive that actually used to see these escalation clauses and what they're supposed to say? How are the people at John Deere asking for a 5.4% raise? John, it should be, if they haven't had a contract raise in 3 years, it should be 10 to 15 to 20 with an escalation clause going forward.
They're not 50 even on the, if you wanted to protect yourself until the next time you negotiate.
But it should be, there should be a CPI kicker after that, if you can believe the CPI, which I don't know if, I don't even know, I think I'd pick certain pieces out of the CPI. I mean, I don't know if I'd use the CPI. What are they thinking, Jen? What are they seeing? It's not hyper, but it's, they're not even starting to, John Deere should say, yes! they should fight long and hard for about an hour, sign the deal, and go out and have a nice cocktail. I mean, what are they talking about? How can these people at Columbia College not give somebody a 3% raise over the last 3 years? I mean, what are they, I don't know the economics of colleges, if they got less students and all that stuff, maybe they can't afford it, that's possible.
Well, they can afford it, especially when it comes to adjunct salaries, Tom, which is the biggest scandal ever. You know, and these people get pretty much a flat rate, and the flat rate hardly ever inches up to anything approaching the CPI. And this is how they're able to open up their doors every day and let students in. But as far as being underpaid, you know, like the stories you told about our friend Bob and what it cost him to put a course together and teach it, there's no way this is a fair compensation plan.
Just to give everybody a point of view on that, our friend, and I think if you go back to some of the older Stocks and Jacks, Bob was our tax expert, and whenever we get together, there's always a, you know, there's an emptiness in the room because Bob is not there. And out of our group, he's the first one to make the jump to the next level, is a fair way of putting it. Anyway, he's not around anymore. And Bob was, you know, everybody loved him, and he was an expert on all this stuff. And he decided, after he retired from one of the accounting firms, and he was a big star there, and well, if you can be a big star in moving companies overseas and cheating on taxes here. Anyway, he was good at that. I don't think I just said a nice thing about him there, did I, John? But anyway, that was his job. And the double Dutch sandwich and all that stuff Bob was intimately involved in. Well, he put together a tax course for Notre Dame's Graduate School of Business. But they're not hiring him. He's 65 years old, or he was at the time, or 60. And probably was late 50s, 60. Well, there's no course. There's no book. So Bob ends up putting this all together himself, and he told me it took him like 4 or 5 months, because Bob is one of these guys. He's kind of like Kevin. Kevin should have been an accountant in the sense that everything had to be perfect that he did, right? I mean, so he's one of those kind of guys. So he puts this together, how many hours it took. Weren't they paying him, I think, John, somewhere in the neighborhood of like $1,500 for this course or something along those lines? And I think it was, I don't know how many people he had in South Bend, but Notre Dame has these satellite things all over the, man, well, all over the place. But they had one in Schaumburg, and they're, if you wanted to, say PTI wanted to send, you know, somebody, one of our younger employees to the MBA program at Notre Dame, you can do that. And, I think you go down for what, 2 weeks to start the deal, Jan, or something? And the rest of the time you go to class in one of these little storefronts. I think it's $5,000 a class, Jan. I know University of Chicago is like 6,500. So let's see. Bob's getting paid, let's say $2,000, let's be nice. Of course, they're giving him the parking things where he could park for the football games and stuff. I don't know if he might have got football tickets, so a little bit.
He might have an office space, too, where he can hang up his coat and answer the phone and stuff, too. So
I don't know. I'm not sure he got, maybe.
Maybe not. I'm
going to say he had 50 people at $5,000 a pop and are paying him $2,000. Now, Maddie, are we talking movie popcorn here in terms of, I mean, we're talking movie popcorn or text messages used to cost a place, what, a millionth of a cent, and they charge you $2 back in the day? And, anyway, so there's a deal, you know, if you can get it. So you're saying Columbia College has some of that going. But Jan, they're not asking enough. But are we in hyperinflation? No. Do you use that term just to get on TV? Yeah, but you know, the weird part is somebody's liable to believe you. You know, I mean, we may have hyperinflation, but I don't. Right now, the numbers do not predict that. They predict possibly topping out at 15%, maybe 16-17 if the growth is a little lower than I think it is. And would it starting to come down because the money supply growth now is only in like the 10 or 11% range? So that's not hyper. It's awful, but it's not hyper.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but I don't remember the term hyperinflation ever emerging in the '70s.
No.
When inflation was in every front page of, you know, newspaper for years. Because there's a certain fear in just using a term like that blithely or, you know, without thinking what people are going to make of it. Because it immediately conjures up images in history of, you know, people with, you know, bushel baskets or wheelbarrows full of, you know, German marks to go to the grocery store, or, you know, countries in Latin America that, you know, there's not enough money on the whole block where people live to buy enough groceries for any one of them. That is a terrible thing when it happens, and it has happened in history, but you don't sort of spring the trap on people sooner than is reasonable. I think it's incredibly reckless, but it's strategic, too. There's a reason why that word has been put out, because normally, you and I know there's great danger attached in ramping up fear that's unjustified. That can take a lot of people down. It can discredit you down the road too, if it isn't backed up by what really happens. So why is that dangerous term? It's a really loaded term in my book. You don't just throw it around loosely and I suspect it isn't being thrown around loosely. It's
what is your
strategic somehow?
You know what? We come back from break. It's strategic, but it's not. Well, I'll give my opinion, and Maddie probably has a better view on this because he knows more about the news media than I do. It's not what you're talking about, John. You're talking too deeply. Because if somebody were to say to me hyperinflation, my mind immediately goes to the guy with the wheelbarrow full of cash going to buy a pair of pants in a Weimar Republic. I mean, that's hyperinflation or something, you know, or what did the lira get to? How many million lira was for a dollar?
Right.
I mean, for $1? What do they finally do in the lira? They lopped three zeros off the end.
Yeah, it took a couple decimal points off.
Yeah, it took a couple decimal points off. But I mean, I think to understand this, I think you need to watch, and I always forget the name of Maddie, always reminds me, you need to watch the Tina Fey movie about Afghanistan. Where every time she got a story back home, as people forgot about the war, and didn't really want to pay attention to it, whatever you sent back had to be more and more bloody to get it on the first three pages here. So if CNBC, which has all, I'll say those guys, they're good guys. We know half of them. I mean, for them to be relevant during the day, every story's got to be led into every story. If you gave my story, Chief says inflation could top out at 12 or 13% and gradually come back down to 10 at what the Fed has done in the last 5 years. That's no headline. Who the hell's going to listen to that? It's probably the truth. They're pretty close to it, or the best I can see right now. And I think any professor would have a real hard time arguing with me about it. But it's not. Who the hell am I? 12%.
It's not a very sexy headline.
No, and that's not a very sexy headline. It's bad. If you're in a position where you're paying your suppliers 10 or 12 or 15% more and you can't raise prices, you're screwed. I mean, so is it life threatening for your business? Probably.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not. You know, you're not going to grab a headline, right? You're not going to get somebody to change over from Fox Business to listen to Jack's interview on this. So it's all about we're confusing the news. And what if every time somebody put out a scholarly paper from a university, or the professor said, "Here's the please give me an analysis of where you say the inflation is, or whether the air pollution is, or whatever it is right now. But when you're done, I want you to write a paragraph for the front of your paper of how you're going to get it on TV to where you make all kinds of claims that." Half the population will be dead from pollution in a month if we don't change or some crap, right? I mean, you need that to get on there, just like Tina Fey in the movie. And I think it's very harming because it's not news. Jack Dorsey said nothing here that would change my view whatsoever. If you're a professor, if this is what your student said in class, you'd say, that was an F question, Jack. shut up and go back to listen to your cell phone. I mean, it's not anything that would but the real story nobody seems to know, Jack. It's not sexy. It's just overwhelming. It's like the advance of the cockroaches or something. Anyway, how's that for an ending of the? So this week, is it ever going to stop raining?
Well, it's showing no signs of it here, Tom.
No. Well, John, thank you very much. You got me ranting here. You got me off. You did to me what I do to poor Brandon on Tuesday. We'll be right. S&P Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 41. Be right back, Mr. Mike Hart, and talk about the market, talk about the VIX. Is anything going to happen here or not? We'll be right back.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and more based Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamale. Mr. Weber on the board. S&P futures up 7. NASDAQ futures up 40. And we've got the Dow futures up 17. Individual stocks. Not much happening in the Dow. We got Chevron, Texaco up 88 cents. We got Goldman Sachs up 180. Nobody's really down. We got Salesforce up 95 cents. United Healthcare up 284. That's really kind of the... There's no real earnings this morning. We got a lot more tech earnings this week, so it should be an interesting week on that with the bad start on Snap the other day because it kind of took Twitter down and it took Facebook down. Facebook's kind of getting its ass kicked lately. I don't know if there's a bottom there or what. I'll probably get Maddie's opinion on that in a second, but... I don't know enough about how they make money, them and Twitter, to know if Snapchat's woes are, across the board there or not. Nikkei down 204.7%, Shanghai up 27.7, same number. And Hang Seng up 5, call that flat. So we got one down, one up, and a flat over in Asia. We're in Europe, we got mostly the upside. DAX up 45.3%, FTSE up 28.4%, CAC around down 5, flat to 0.1%, so not much there. They've been, CAC around has been leading the market up, so just a little bit of a readjustment there today, but not very much. As a way of review on Friday, Dow was up 73, S&P down 5. NASDAQ down pretty heavy, though. 125 is because of the Snapchat thing. Bonds, 1.66 on the 10-year. The Bund, minus 0.10. And Japan, positive 0.10. So we're... The Bund is kind of heading slowly, I don't know about surely, to the positive territory, and Japan has been creeping up. I don't think we've seen this one this high there in a few years. Oil up again today by a lot, of $1.29, 150, it's 1.54% at 85.05, went up 97 cents to 86.50, that's 1.1%. Natural gas up 34 cents, this is startling, that's a 6% move in natural gas. It's up to 562. It was just under 5 hours. I'm going to say, was it last Wednesday, Manny? $4.99 or last Tuesday? RBOB up 4 cents, 252. Gas in Indiana was not any cheaper here, Manny, which is kind of surprising. Gold up $7, 1803. Silver unchanged, 2445. Copper up 2 cents, 452. And we got a rally in the crypto here, too. The Bitcoin up $2,500 to $62,973, almost back up to the high of last week, which it backed off from, and now it's right back up there. So, Matty, this stuff is moving this morning. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a lakeshore flood advisory that remains in effect until 7 p.m. tonight. Large and battering waves of 12 to 16 feet are expected. That will result in shoreline erosion, dangerous conditions near the lakeshore, in addition to flooding. So keep that in mind. With a lot of rain all day yesterday and continuing all day today until later on this afternoon, and then you factor in 35 mile per hour plus winds in addition to that, and you get some tough conditions, especially on the lakeshore. Hopefully no one deals with a lot of flooding, but it is affecting traffic too. High traffic volumes on the Edens and Kennedy, same for Lakeshore Drive. The Eisenhower and the Stevenson and Southside Expressway is not much better. But I will say there are not a lot of accidents, so everyone's driving slow and behaving themselves, so that's good news. Off the expressways, there's a fire on the south side, Harlem at 87th Street. And on the north side, there's a crash, Western Avenue at Berwyn. It's a car versus a building. We usually think the building wins those type of collisions. But everything else all good out there. Weather today, as I mentioned, rain all day until later this afternoon. Cool temperatures, a high of 53. Right now it's rainy and 51 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, no rain down there. Sunshine with a high of 90. Right now it's clear and 64. In sports, the Bears are now 3-4 after they were blown out by Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. 38-3 was the final in that one. Arizona Cardinals are undefeated, though, at 7-0. They took care of Houston 31-5. By the way, that's the first time in NFL history that a game ended with a score of 31-5. Sunday Night Football, it was the Colts upsetting the 49ers in San Francisco 30-18. In hockey, Blackhawks remain winless, 0-5-1, six games into the year. They were blown out by the Red Wings, 6-3. NBA basketball, Bulls are undefeated in the early going. They were off last night, but they'll look to go 4-0 tonight as they'll take on the Raptors. That's a 6:30 p.m. Central Time tip. Chief.
You know, we're actually having a little bit of a flood problem, Eddie? Is it the Lake Michigan and Chicago River? It must be. You know what? I'm not going to blame this on global warming, but you know what seems weird to me is all these storms we've had where the wind is from the north and the east. I don't recall ever having that before. Have you?
Where, I mean, I don't think I've ever thought about it. Meaning
you're a weather guy.
Meaning storms moving from the east.
I'm
to
saying
the west?
Wind. The wind last night was easterly. That's why we're having so much problems on the lakeshore. Why the downtown lock there? It must be getting lake water. Must be coming over the top of the lock.
Yeah, it must be.
I mean, it's normally. I mean, we have prevailing westerly winds here usually, but
well, the storms always come from the west.
Yeah,
I know that, but I never thought about the wind only blowing from the west.
Well, I mean, that's why the people down in the southern tip of the lake have had so much erosion. These storms. I mean, you got how many hundred miles for the wave to go, but it's aiming towards your living room.
Yeah,
I mean, it's it's reasonably bad. Hey, what is your feel on this whole thing with the snap on these guys? I mean, you know more about these outfits. Because we had discussions about this kind of stuff this weekend. I mean, there's all these companies that if you look at the, you know, I'm not the guy who only does apartment buildings, right? I mean, I've been investing in the market for like a really long time for me and other people. So nothing is better than finding a company that has an idea, they start to grow. And usually the stock price, if they're well-known, is going to run ahead of the company. And then the company catches up to the stock price, and then all of a sudden, you know, everything works out fine. But every once in a while, you see the hype in 1999 was crazed, 2007 a little bit. But now these companies, and I talked to, you know, some of my Notre Dame guys were saying, these companies have all these great ideas. But, Manny, do you think, I mean, a Snapchat, where do you suppose... I mean, it gets to the point where all of a sudden now you need revenue. So I'm looking at this Snapchat at $80. Now it was down like $20 on Friday, right, which caused the NASDAQ to drop some. And it's not making much of a bounce back here today at all. It's up like 50 cents. So it's up 55.64. So it was down from like 80. So it's still down a bunch. And I was looking, you know, and I'm not giving investment advice or anything like that. But, I mean, I look at it, it looks to me, man, like they don't make a dime. And they've never made a dime. They lose money. And maybe there was a quarter they might have snuck into the plus column. And it looks like their revenue is like, you know, $8 a share. So they're pushing 90 times revenue, maybe $10 a share, 80 times revenue, 70 times revenue. But the company's been around like a while. It's not like it started last month. Now you get these guys, you get Zoom. You can name, you know, 100 of these things. You could, I couldn't. When is this big bulge in revenue going to come across the board, and how the hell are they going to get it? I mean, Twitter and rest. You know, who's going to? I don't know that this current world is paying for any of this crap. I mean, they pay, but
well, I think Facebook makes a lot of money.
Okay,
because I think they advertise.
They actually do. You're right.
I think they're the way that they can target advertising, good, bad, or indifferent, works, and it's proven to work, and they make a ton of money off of that. Twitter, I don't think, is anywhere near that same category for whatever reason. And Snapchat, I don't know how they advertise at all. I've used that before. I haven't used it in a while. I know a little bit about the company, but, you know, and like you said, it has been around for about 10 years. But I don't know. I don't see how they can make money. I mean, I'm sure they can run little ads in between you messing around on sending your videos or whatever. But I don't see any way that they have a sustainable, you know, revenue driving platform.
It seems like there's kind of a lot. I mean, how big is Zoom? I mean, this is what is kind of weird.
Well, Zoom makes sense to me, and Zoom is nothing like Snapchat. Snapchat is a social media platform. As far as I know, it's no different than like TikTok or Twitter or something like that. Zoom has a very, you know, subscription based sort of model that appeals to a lot of companies, and I think Zoom can make a lot of money.
Well, I think they do too. But here's the part that you know, and every generation, every time is different. But you look at something and you say, okay, The trick used to be, and I'll go back to something really stupid and really simple. The trick used to be, if you invented like the hula hoop, okay, long before your time, Eddie, you have to price the thing in such a way that somebody else looks at it and goes, "Eh, you know, it's costing him $2 to make a hula hoop, and he's selling it for $5. I don't want to get in that business." That type of thing. But how some of these businesses, how much money can Zoom? I'm just picking that name out of a hat. How much can they make? How much can they charge and make? Can they make and charge and make in that order enough to make the stock price worthwhile? Or if they charge and make that amount, will somebody else say, "Wait a minute, that business isn't that hard"? I mean, this isn't recreating the earth to be able to have a meeting, for God's sake. I mean, I don't know how much of it's patented. Probably not. I don't know if any. And to where somebody else all of a sudden enters the business. That's the part that I think is really mispriced in a lot of this stuff.
When you're talking about Zoom and its competitors, there's a lot of players in that business.
That's what I'm saying.
There have been for a long time, but it just blew up in the last 2 years because of the pandemic. And, you know, you don't really need to use Zoom when everyone's in the office and when you're seeing customers in person and you're actually flying to their offices like we used to do. Then over the last year and a half, we couldn't do that, and so these companies that had always existed, they blew up, and now they're huge, and they're very sustainable, but there already are a ton of competitors. My company, in the short time I've been there, I mean, I've been there a while, but in the 9.5 years I've been there, we've used 4 different companies of these, and now we use Microsoft's version, Teams, because it's the cheapest. And Microsoft is big enough that they've undercut a lot of the smaller companies like Zoom and Slack and WebEx and all these others that have been doing this subscription-based model where you pay, you know, $20 a month if you have up to, you know, 300 employees, and if you have 1,000 employees, you pay this much, and if you have 5,000 employees, you pay this much. And there's a lot of companies that use this technology, but there's a lot of competitors.
Well, that's my point. I mean, is when you look at, so I'm looking here at the Zoom, and I got nothing against Zoom at all. I mean, I think they should, like you say, they were in the right place at the right time. But I think that what is kind of missing in some of this analysis, because it's not whether somebody else is right or you and I are wrong. That's not the point. The point is the methodology, because I'm looking at their PE ratio is 83 times, right? So I look at it and I say, all right, well, they had like the best year they could possibly have had last year. It doesn't mean they're not going to get bigger. And it's at 83 times this year, you know, which means the Gazintas, 83 goes into 276 where the stock is what? 3 and change of share, right? So for a stock that's trading 276, I don't mind being early. I don't, you know, if I think they have a good idea or they can grow or whatever, I don't mind paying 83 times earnings, because Every great company at some point when they were young were 83 times earnings or worse, right?
Yeah, but they're like down 50% over the last year.
Well,
right?
I'm saying, but I'm looking at today's numbers, right? So my point is that now at 277, I don't even know the name of the company. I just know they're new. They got a lot of stuff happening going their way, and I like the management. And I'm going to have to sit there and say, okay, somewhere now interest rates, if they go up, it's going to be quicker. But right now I'm going to say, I'm willing to give these guys $2.77 a share. If I think in 5 years, instead of that PE ratio being 83 times, I want it down to 20, which means they're going to be making 20 Gazinda, I'll be Jethro, 20, you know, what is that? $15, $13 a share. Okay, so now, and then maybe they're sending me a check for 2 or 3 at that point. Is there a snowball's chance in hell that these guys get to $10 a share in earnings in 5 years? I mean, the answer here might be yes, but if you look at them, then you look at Snap, then you look at 15 of these stocks all in a row, is there a chance in 5 years they could become, or 10 years if you want to even be, you know, be willing to wait longer, is there any chance at all that these guys are going to make $12 a share without 15 other people being in the business and chopping at them like an axe to a tree? I mean, I would say
very unlikely.
Well, this is all I'm saying is when you look at these stocks, you don't listen to me, don't listen to somebody else, look at yourself and say, is there a chance that these guys, now obviously if you're Amazon or something, or Microsoft, the answer was yes, you know, and you wanted to be all over those things, right? And there's always, if you and I came up with 25 stocks like this and looked at numbers and start shaking our head, I'll bet out of the 25, Maddie, there's two or three there you want to hold for the rest of, you know, your grandkids' life, right? There's always going to be some. Question is, who is it? How do you know at this stage? And I think right now, with interest rates going the other way, meaning up, the price to wait keeps getting higher and higher. So if there's two things that I would like to see the current investor look a little closer at. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, value everything like it's a six flat. I mean, I know we're not going there. Plus, I don't want to do that. But you have to look and say, is there a chance in the foreseeable future that these guys are going to be making some scratch? And enough to where the stock price is both justifiable today, but we're also talking, part of my conversation here is, the stock needs to be 277 5 years from now, too. Right? Because if the stock doubles, now we got to go to, what, $20 a share, right? So it's not, because we're buying this thing at 277 because we think it's going to be 350 next year. Now, if we think that, you should also be thinking about, now, what's going to happen here for these guys to all of a sudden starting to grow into these numbers? Because if interest rates go back to 3 or 4%, there's a competition for that money. I mean, nobody's going to wait for whoever the chairman of this thing is. Nobody's going to wait for this guy to decide to have a good year to pay me when I can get 5% for nothing, for risk-free. So right now, this is kind of the message, and it's one of the reasons for my people, I'm sticking real close to some of the indices, and I'm keeping everything pretty protected, because I think there's a pretty good chance that some of the stocks actually will be able to hang in there and do okay, especially if the economy ever gets better. I mean, what's your feel on that? Other than people telling you supply chain right in your face, you talk to people over the country. I happen to think some of the supply chain stuff's getting a little better. What do you think?
I haven't seen any sort of reason to believe it's getting better or worse. It seems to kind of be the same. My brother and I were in Restaurant Depot yesterday morning, and it was the first time in the last three times we were there that they actually had all of our stuff we were looking for. So in that way, maybe it is getting better. I don't know.
Well,
you walk the shelves in Target or any grocery store, and some of them are half empty.
Yep.
And that's just, and I don't do a lot of shopping, but just in the handful of times I've been out in the last few weeks, it doesn't seem to be that much better.
No, I mean,
if at all.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like the cars.
Depot had our stuff for the first time. They've been horrible.
I was there 2 weeks ago, and everything I tried to get, there was no frozen vegetables to be had.
Yeah.
I drove by because I was in Indiana picking apples, and by the way, I had some for you in the truck today, and I didn't give them to you tomorrow.
Nice.
Let's put it this way: it's very difficult to have the bag in one hand and be picking apples with your other hand while you're eating one at the same time.
I could imagine. What hand was your beer in? That's my question.
Oh, no, I wasn't drinking. I was just eating apples.
How do you pick apples without drinking beer?
Well, I was going to go later than that, but meet guys later. So, right. I focus. You know, I never had a beer in a golf course. I figured there was plenty of times after. I never had a beer when I'm playing softball. You know that.
That's true.
I mean, it's just,
I don't usually drink beer while I'm playing softball, but I do like drinking beer while I'm playing golf.
That's what the bar's for afterward.
It's
an hour game. I can lay off for an hour, for God's sake. But, I went by probably four Chevy dealers. The lots were pretty much empty everywhere. And every truck that was in the lot, to say that the American, they were so special, Americans, every truck that was in the lot, Maddie, was the most tricked out truck you could possibly find. We're not wasting no stinking chips and a regular pickup. Every one of them, they had to be $100,000. These things are gorgeous. The big four doors with the, you know, the steps so you can get in because the thing's high enough, but then the steps retract up. Can you imagine doing it in the wintertime a few times with some ice on there? How long is that thing going to work? But these things are absolutely, they're the most gorgeous vehicles I've ever seen. And yet, so there's three or four trucks on the lot that are $80,000 plus, maybe 100, and there's nothing else. If you walk in, if you actually had a business and said, give me a regular pickup truck, you'd be laughed out of the place. But I'm saying 20, 25 cars on a big lot. How are these guys even staying in business? Other than charging a lot of money for individual cars. But, I think there's, and in the used car market, you can't find a used car anywhere. This is crazy. This is not America. And I'm going to say, Manny, that there's more chips are being produced this year than last year and the year before. What do you think the issue is? You talk to everybody. Is it all BS? We had a lady on TV the other day talking about warehouse space. She gets the warehouse and the guy goes, we got all kinds of room. And then they're going to blame it on the truckers. And then the truckers are going to blame it on the owner. I mean, what do you think's happening? You've listened to everybody on the show here forever.
I really don't know because, I mean, like you said, everyone seems to point the finger somewhere else. And then, you know, you talk about people saying there's a labor shortage, and then other people say there's not a labor shortage. There's just a shortage of high-paying jobs, of good jobs, and no one wants the crappy jobs anymore. And I don't, you know, there's something to be said for that, too. It all depends on the perspective of the person that's doing the speculating, right?
Well, what do you make of the most definitive work out of our group that I've seen on it is Carl's work regarding that the actual people available for employment in the last year and a half is in the unadjusted numbers. The adjusted numbers still look like everything's okay. He claims the unadjusted numbers, we've actually lost population. And there actually are 4 million people that are out of the labor force.
Or at the bottom of the lake?
Well, that's my question. He goes, and we've actually lost, if you look at the numbers, we're like 3.5 to 4 million people that are, used to be in the employed column, and there's a couple of them in the unemployed column. The unemployed column hasn't grown that much. They're in the last column, like they, you know, maybe everybody who could retired, or maybe people went back to Mexico. I think Chicago's less. But your brother in the food service business, he has to know all kinds of people that are, what do you want to call them, the front of the house line cooks, or people that used to make the $10 an hour that were the backbone of that industry. Basically,
right. And they're now turning their noses up at $10.
But does he know 15 individual people that he's been in contact with? Are they still here? Are they doing something else? They go back to Mexico?
I'd have to ask him. I told you, I've said on the show a few times, he knows a lot of people that said screw this and went into construction and are still here, but are just out of the industry, the restaurant business altogether, and are now working construction because they could work outside and with no fear of a shutdown and losing their job, and they made more money. I'd have to ask him if he also knows people that, you know, went back to Mexico or wherever they're from.
Because I have not seen any sort of a real report, other than Carl, of what the hell actually is happening. I'm gonna guess, and Jan, we should ask him when he was in, because he was actually doing some census work. I think Chicago's down 150,000 people since a year ago, St. Patrick's Day, maybe even more. I just don't think they're around. I mean, they're not in the schools. What's the schools down? 40,000 kids?
Yeah, I think Chicago and New York and a lot of the major epicenters of you know, urban cities they have to be down in population, especially in the cold weather climates, just because you had a year and a half where unless you could be outdoors, you couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Whether you agree with the policy or not, you literally just couldn't do anything. And a ton of people just fleed those northern big cities and went where there's outdoor space, where the weather's warm, where they could do things, whether that's Florida or Arizona or Texas or Tennessee or Georgia, wherever they ended up. And you can't blame them. And I think we lost a lot of population from that.
Well, Manny, what do you think? What would happen tomorrow? And it's more of a, I wish your bro was here, but you're the closest thing I got, so I'm asking you. What would happen tomorrow if this Merck just came out with this drug that supposedly treats people that have, bad COVID? And if somebody, not saying they should, not throwing an opinion out there, but if somebody, be it Jay Pritzker or the president or somebody, says, hey, you know what? We've got an awful lot of people that have already had COVID. The vaccines are working not as well as we'd like, but pretty well. And, oh, by the way, we have this other drug that if you get it bad,
We think he got a real, real serious chance of pulling through, even though he won't have a nice week or two. It's time. Let's just open things back up. So what do you think happens if all of a sudden McCormick Place opens up? Well, it wouldn't happen in a week, but next month, all of a sudden the Conrad Hilton has a huge meeting in their basement, the Marriott. Where the hell are we going to get all these people? I mean, they're not sitting at their home. The idea that there's, you know, 100,000 people sitting at home collecting a paycheck, drinking a beer. First of all, if they are, you don't just go to work tomorrow and work 8 hours, and it takes a while to get back in, right? You just don't, you're not going to go do that. What do you think happens? How do we even open up? If all of a sudden, okay, in a month, we're right back to normal. How do these places even, these hotels can't be, they can't have a third of their normal staff, even if they're open.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. They'll figure it out, and if they don't, then they'll close. I mean, who cares? But the restaurant in my neighborhood across the street that was closed for the last year, they just opened up last week, and they were full staff. They were ready to go.
Okay.
I don't, it was completely different people than the people that worked there before, except for maybe the owners, but their whole staff was different, but they found them. They'll find guys, but I'm not worried about that. I don't believe in this whole idea that it's impossible to hire people.
That's what I'm asking.
If you offer them enough money where they can live in the town that they're working, then they'll work.
No, I didn't lead you to that answer at all. That's where I am, basically. You don't think we chased a lot of people, the Hispanic people and other, because, you know, sometimes we don't want them here, sometimes we do. Did we chase them out? I think we might have chased some of them out. I'm not sure.
It's possible.
We've had huge exodus of the African-American population. I think it's got even worse with the violence and everything.
I think that's more of just the destruction of their neighborhoods.
Well, we lost 80,000 leading up to the COVID. Okay, so I'll bet that's only accelerated with the violence and everything else.
Yeah.
How do you lose 100,000 people, for God's sake?
I wouldn't want to live there.
No, I don't disagree with that. But so... what's going to happen with this guy? One guy who won't take his vaccine. Is it Kyrie Leonard? What's his name?
Kyrie Irving?
Yeah.
Well, right now he's given up $17 million of his $35 million salary because he can't play in any of his home games in New York.
This is New York. These guys, they're going to wonder how they're going to kill that goose, Manny.
So there you go.
Unbelievable. SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 41. Back tomorrow, Mr. Jeff Joseph, Brendan McCornan, our usual... We got Kenny Polcari. We got by the way, Joel was. They were losing early, weren't they? Michigan.
They were never losing, but they were in a close game early, and then they blew out Northwestern.
If he'd have lost Northwestern,
Northwestern stinks.
Yeah, they're awful. Be right back tomorrow morning, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey guys, what's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.